Howdy, and thank you for sticking around for my talk. I am a PhD student in Dr. Greg Sword's lab at the Texas A&M Entomology Department, and today I'll be talking to you about two of the big experiments I've done in my dissertation research. One of them is looking directly at volatile emissions with a chemical analysis, and the other one is assessing stink bug behavior with regards to those volatiles. So the main characters of my talk today are plant volatiles, or plant odors. Plant odors have many ecological roles. Both above and below ground tissues emit volatiles, and it's those volatiles that are the main way that plants communicate with other plants and the animals in their environment. So some of the famous examples include how floral volatiles attract pollinators. Fruit odors are going to attract seed dispersers, but leaf tissues are also constantly emitting volatiles, and it's those odors that something like a herbivorous moth would cue into to find a suitable host plant. So that bouquet of volatiles that a healthy, happy, herbivore-free plant is producing is known as the constitutive volatile profile. So once that moth has found its host plant, lays its eggs, and those eggs hatch, and the caterpillars start attacking the plant mounts a defensive response in its volatile emissions. So large quantities of volatiles that it was already emitting are emitted from storage, and it starts to synthesize new compounds de novo, which have both direct and indirect effects on the herbivores. So some of the compounds have direct toxicity on first instar larvae, and a lot of the compounds serve as cues for predators like parasitoid wasps or generalists too to come find plants that have herbivores present so they can use them as prey. So the difference here between the constitutive and the induced, I'm not sure if I said that, but that bouquet of odors that come from the plant under attack is known as the induced profile. And the difference between the constitutive and the induced profile is a key component of my talk today. But the other major factor of what I'm talking about today is not on this diagram because it's often overlooked with regards to volatile signaling. And that's the fact that microbes can affect plant volatiles. So if you look on the left here, with regards to pathogens, so just like when plants come under attack by an herbivore and they launch a defensive volatile response, when plants are attacked by pathogens, they also launch a defensive volatile response. But that's not what I'm interested in. Actually, I'm interested in what's going on the right side of this figure here, where through a phenomenon called priming, beneficial microbes interact with the plant and allow the plant to respond to herbivory in a greater, more pronounced way. So this is best studied and understood with beneficial microbes in the rhizosphere. And it's not as though the interaction with these microbes triggers defenses right then, and the plant's always investing in defense. Instead, the defensive genes are primed so that when ultimately the herbivore does attack, it can respond in a better way compared to plants that didn't interact with the beneficial microbes. And we have evidence for this from our lab. We saw that in cotton, with these two pests, Liguus and Nizara, that if you had cotton plants treated with endophytic fungi, these two species of fungi specifically, these two pests were deterred from feeding on them. So in choice tests, they preferred control plants over the plants that had been treated with the fungus, and in no choice tests, they exhibited a significant latency to first contact. So I said that these were endophytic fungi. Endophytic fungi are microbes that can live within plant tissues asymptomatically. So every plant you've ever seen has endophytic fungi and bacteria living inside the tissues, but most of them just use the plant as a house. But some of them interact through a mutualistic symbiosis so that priming can occur with the plant. And so the behavior of these insects towards the reproductive structures of treated and untreated plants led us to develop the hypothesis that these fungi we were using are affecting the volatile emissions. And just a brief background on these fungi, Phialimonium inflatum, we actually recovered as an endophyte from field-grown cotton. So we went out to the field, took tissues, brought them back to the lab, and cultured what we could out. And Fialimonium inflatum was one of them. Bavaria bassiana, you might recognize. It's an entomopathogenic, it's commercially available entomopathogenic fungus that you can spray as a biocontrol agent in your field, but it's actually a very versatile organism and is capable of an endophytic lifestyle. So we were interested in these two, and I set out, because of that previous experiment, I set out to actually analyze the chemistry. What are these volatiles coming off of the plants? Are fungus-treated plants emitting different volatiles than control plants, as that previous data would suggest? So to test this, I have a fully factorial design of the endophyte treatments and herbivores. So it's a seed soak. The seeds are surface sterilized first. They're soaked briefly in bleach and ethanol to kill any microbes that might be on the surface of the seed. And then they're soaked overnight in a spore solution of 10 to the 8th spores per milliliter. And control plants are soaked in just pure autoclaved water. For each experiment, for each of those treatments, two plants were used. One of the plants did not have any herbivores on them, so I could collect the constitutive profile for each treatment, and the other plants had Spidoptera exigua larvae put on them to collect the induced profile. So I used Spidoptera exigua larvae, the beet armyworm, because it's a strong foliar feeder, and so that I would know using that I would get a good signal for the induced profile, so that we would really be able to tell if these endophytes might be affecting things constitutively or only in an induced manner. So you can see I enclosed individual leaves in these jars. And they were kept in these jars for 8 hours. So the volatiles built up in the jars for 8 hours prior to sampling. Sampling used a solid phase microextraction needle, or a SPEMI fiber. And I just pierce it through this septum here and expose it to the headspace inside. And it acts like a small sponge to collect a representative sample of the volatiles that are in there. And then I analyze that on the gas chromatograph and take the area for all the peaks for the different compounds that I assessed. I assessed 12 compounds. And then I use those peak areas in a discriminant analysis. And this is all done in R. So the discriminant analysis is kind of like a principal components analysis, PCA. It takes those 12 variables, the multidimensional data, smushes it into a two-dimensional space. And you can see that all of the data points are tethered to the centroid of their respective group. So the statistics are run on how close together or far apart those centroids are in this two-dimensional space. And so all you see here is that the plants with an herbivore present are significantly different than the plants without an herbivore. And that's not really interesting. As you remember from my introduction, it's common knowledge that if you put herbivores on the plant, it's going to change. What I'm interested in is this other effect here, a significant interaction of herbivore and endophyte. And what that suggests is that on one side or the other is where we're going to see how the herbivore influences, that's where we're going to see the endophyte effect. So in this next slide, you're going to see the induced data. It's all the same data points, but instead of being tethered to their herbivore status, they'll be tied to their respective endophyte treatment. So what you see is that, it's messy, I know, but on the right, the centroids of the constitutive profiles are clustered more tightly together than those centroids of the induced data over here on the left. So when an herbivore is present, that's when we can see effects of the endophyte treatment. And so now I'm going to zoom in just on the induced data and take a closer look, and we see that the P. inflatum treatment, that endophyte that we recovered, it is significantly different in its emissions when an herbivore is present than controls on both axes. And so it's great to be able to say, okay, you treat the plant and it's different. But how is it different? What does that mean with regards to the 12 volatiles that I was assessing? And with the discriminant analysis, you can also have a correlation circle. And so this correlation circle shows how each of those volatiles that I assessed is correlated with each of the axes. And what you see, what we find, is that beta-osamine, this monoterpene, is the most highly correlated with its directionality on both axes, similar to how P. inflatum is different on these two axes. So that suggests that the P. inflatum treatment is specifically altering the way that cotton responds to the herbivory through terpene production. And this is cool because now this gives us some, like, kind of like a smoking gun to look at, like, is this compound responsible for insect behavior, that kind of a thing. And that's kind of where we're going moving forward. But there was one other aspect of this experiment that I didn't tell you about, and that's that I quantified the levels of herbivory. So remember, I was using individual leaves And when I designed the experiment, I was a little worried that maybe if the caterpillars fed differentially based on treatment, that could lead to differences in the volatile emissions. So I photographed the leaves before and after each experiment and quantified how many square centimeters were consumed in that 8-hour period. And we found that there were no significant differences. So the difference between the P. inflatum and the controls can't be attributed just to differences in levels of herbivory. And that suggests that that is probably a priming effect, like I had talked about earlier. So the next thing I wanted to do was further assess the stink bug behavior. And in the introduction, I told you that we did this, but we had excised the squares in the bowls for the experiment. And when you do that, you remove them from the plant, you're going to change the volatile emission. And I wanted to do something that was a little bit more realistic in the field. Plants, you know, the insects are interacting with live, intact bowls. So what I did is I used that same modified mason jar thing to close individual bowls into here so that Nizara viridula placed in the mouth of the Y-tube will get air from a treated bowl and air from a control bowl. And these were from greenhouse-grown plants that were kept insect-free, so we can assume that it's the constitutive profile that they are responding to and not the induced. What we found is that Nizara viridula prefers control plants over Vibassiana-treated plants, but has no preference when P. inflatum is involved. And this is interesting because we saw in the last experiment P. inflatum had an effect on the volatiles, but we're not seeing that here. Here it seems that the insects are responding to differences in volatiles from Vibassiana. So we have evidence for a defensive volatile, you know, effects on a defensive volatile response by treatment with one fungus, and evidence for constitutive effects by our other fungus. But I didn't see those constitutive differences in my chemical analysis, possibly because I was looking at the emissions from leaves while as those insects were responding to the emissions from bowls. So I've built these scaffolds so I can move them into the greenhouse and put my individual bowls in the jars and collect with the spiny fibers and do actual chemical analysis of the bowls themselves. And what's cool is that this is transferable to the field. And because that's really what it gets to when it comes to application of this. I mean, sure, we can get beneficial fungi to trigger priming in the lab, but can we use it to enhance herbivore defense? And hopefully next year I'll be able to answer that question for you. So with that, I just need to thank everybody who helped me get this done. This work was funded by a USDA grant to Greg Sword, Charles Suh, and Mike Kolomietz. And I think I have time for questions.
You do. All right, any questions? Thank you.
In the back?
Yeah, for your
That's a good question. So what did I rear the insects on, the Spidoptera exigua larvae, before using them in the experiment? So they were raised until the second instar on diet for Helicoverpa zea that was supplemented with linseed oil, but then transferred onto conventional cotton leaves until they were the third instar, so that they would get used to feeding on leaf matter. And then for the experiment, I transferred them onto the plants. Do I think that their microbiome would... So the question is, will microbes in the insects affect the signals that we see in the plant? I guess it could be possible. I don't think that caterpillars have a strong resident microbiome in their gut. But given that they were all reared the same, I mean, it's not like I had different colonies that were going to be put onto my different treatments. So hopefully if there is any effect of the insect microbiome on the volatile emissions, it'll be the same across treatment. Yes, sir? Yeah, so the question is about how this is adaptive for the plant and the microbe interaction. So do you want just how it's adapted for plant-microbe interactions or for the volatiles too?
Whatever.
Okay, yeah, so the volatile emissions of plants as a defense, they have evolved to have this defensive volatile response because some of the compounds that they produce are directly toxic, but many of them are used as cues for foraging predators to come have an indirect defense by removing those predators. With regards to how it's adaptive for the microbe-plant interaction, with the ones that prime, with the ones that have a true mutualistic symbiosis, the plants are basically feeding the fungus that lives inside of them. And the ecological theory there is that plants select, actively are selecting their microbiome so that they only permit certain microbes to live within and around them. And so it's believed that, or hypothesized that with them selecting, actively selecting for who is allowed to live in them, that they will choose them based on potential benefits that they can receive from them. So exactly how these fungi have interactions with cotton immune system to lead to priming, we haven't figured out yet. But it has been studied in Trichoderma and maize and things like that. So you can look into that. So we used two fungi. One of them was an entomopathogen, but it's Bovaria bassiana. It's commercially available, but it's capable of an endophytic lifestyle. And there are no reports, as far as I know, of Bovaria bassiana as an endophyte becoming an entomopathogen. So we were just looking at, does this thing have a priming effect if it lives as an endophyte versus this other one, which we found as an endophyte from cotton? Thank you.
All right, thank you.